Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start off by talking about a very interesting Detroit defense, Logan, led by Aaron Glenn, who very well might be a head coach a month from now for some other team. Former defensive back in the league with the Jets and the Patriots, came up on Sean Payton's staff in New Orleans, where he was there under Dennis Allen as well, the recently fired Saints coach, who's going to be a defensive coordinator again and is very, very good at that job. But Campbell down there in New Orleans as well, brought him up to Detroit. And I think the thing everybody knows about Detroit's defense is they're really banged up. At points this year, down more than half of their defensive starters. What I don't know if people fully realize is they didn't actually fall off that much. There are certain elements, like their pass rush certainly took a huge hit when Nathan Hutchinson went out. He actually is still their team leader in sacks despite missing well over half the season. But this defense is really good, and they played some of their best ball of late, Logan. What do you see when you watch them? What stands out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun group to watch, and I think it's fun because it is diverse. And what I mean by that is even on the first and second down cut-up, usually that's kind of the easiest thing to kind of find a common thread, right? They kind of bounce in between multiple fronts. They get in a four-down front. They get in a three-down front. Some people say 5-2, however you want to categorize that. But they kind of do it with their four-down front personnel. So you'll get like a stand-up Will linebacker, kind of like Frankie Louvu, you know, with the Commanders. He'll be the stand-up defensive end. So there's a little bit of that. And then they have this really cool kind of they play a little bit more man than most teams, but then they kind of they'll rotate out and get into cover three, but they also get out into cover two, and you're like, oh, this time they're in quarters. And they're really good about kind of presenting different looks and maintaining continuity, if that makes sense, maintaining a consistency with the rules, and there's not busts, and so they can get to a bunch of different stuff. And it makes sense. He's been the defensive coordinator there for 3 years, so they should be able to do a lot of stuff, but it shows up quite a bit. And then on third down, you see just a very diverse pressure package. It's not like Todd Bowles where you're like, oh my God, this is, you know, like the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's, you know, kind of stuff that the Commanders run. We got two stand-up guys in the A-gap. We're going to run some type of, you know, Zimmer pressures where there's like a nickel. We're going to bring four-man overloads. We're going to stress you that way. But we have different stuff we can do. And so I think the pressure rate numbers are very, very high. But I think that's partially because they do play some of that kind of three-down, five-man front on first and second down. So every time you run the football, it registers as a blitz. But, you know, third and medium, red zone, like as you're getting into that fringe red zone area, like that field goal range, they'll bring a little bit of pressure. It's kind of on script in terms of when they do it. But they do it well. And it's that coupled with the flexibility and diversity they bring in the back end, kind of, you know, they play a lot of man. That's what they're going to do. Like that's like when the chips are down, they're going to play man. But they do have these other changeups, and you see them affect quarterbacks. Like there's a couple with Josh Allen in the Buffalo game where they play a different coverage than they were expecting. He reads the wrong side. He's expecting cover one. It's actually cover two. There's a flat player, and Josh Allen can scramble off, and we'll talk about that more in a second. But that flexibility is pretty devastating. And like usually if I watch, you know, 50 clips of a defense, I kind of like, I got a good feel for what they're doing. I can kind of identify certain coverages pre-snap, right? This one, not really. And that was something I was like, this is probably where their advantage lies from a technical standpoint, is that they do have this ability to kind of, even with man zone indicators, it was really interesting. They'd bring a guy across the formation, the guy's running with him like it's man, and then the ball snapped, and then they all bail out to cover two, and you're like, dang, like that was a really good disguise. So lots of stuff like that, So flexibility, I think, is the number one thing that keeps them dangerous.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, too, that Glenn has been here for a couple years, and it's something we should talk about when we get to their offense as well. Part of the reason that Detroit's really special as a team is they have done something you're not supposed to be able to do, which is have this level of continuity. Ben Johnson was supposed to be a head coach 2 years ago, and then when he wasn't 2 years ago, he was definitely supposed to be last year, and we don't need to relitigate that whole situation, especially as it's in regards to Washington. But the point is, like, it is rare that you get here, that you get, and you've talked about this so much, especially in the offseason, some of the install periods and things like that, that it takes, say, 3 years to learn an offense. How often do you actually get three right. years unless you are Kyle in San Francisco or Sean in LA, where the head coach is the offensive coordinator? Or if you're, I mean, I even look at, like, Raheem Morris just fired his defensive coordinator in Atlanta, and it's like, you're a defensive head coach. You just fired your defensive coordinator in year one, and you weren't taking that on. And that's why, actually why I like, you know, since Dan decided he wasn't going to call the plays, like, he hired one of his guys, so there could be that continuity. But year over year scheme evolution is a huge advantage, and it's not just in what you can kind of build of, like, hey, we can add more stuff. It's your base stuff, or the stuff that you have been running. You know it so well that you can disguise it better. You can do all these different things. And I think that's a huge element, that's a huge, like, benefit for Detroit structurally. But the fact that they can do it when they have guys they brought in off the street, I hate that term, but off the street in the middle of the season and still do this, I think that just speaks to how well Aaron Glenn teaches this defense and the rest of that staff teaches this defense, because they haven't really missed a beat despite the fact that they've had all of these injuries. They're still doing that next level stuff.
Yeah, and I do think it's helpful when you have, again, like, the cultural element is so important, and Dan talks about that here, you know, with some of the injuries that the Commanders have negotiated. It's like, you're preparing everyone like they're going to play. Like, and that's a rare, I know that sounds like, oh, you know, like, everyone should be doing that. Not everyone does that, right? You're getting your starters ready to go. And so making sure you have some type of developmental, like, pathway for those backups, the guys you bring in who could be playing in a week or two, like, that's really important. And I think you see elements of that for sure, because, you know, they've had a lot of injuries, but there doesn't seem to be, like, there's not, like, a discipline issue. You're not like, oh, this guy's new, so he's not going to run the blitz right. It's like, oh, they runs it perfectly, or they're going to run this disguise, and this guy knows exactly what to do. And they do communicate a lot. They do kind of do a lot of the kind of fundamental things of defense. But I do think that's a huge element, is they do seem to have a very, at least watching the film, a very consistent way of coaching that allows all these players to get ready. And I think that's a testament to Aaron Glenn. And, you know, Dan Campbell said this in a presser the other day when they were talking about Aaron Glenn getting a head coaching opportunity. He's like, he teaches it better than anybody I've been around. And as a coach, like, a guy that I've been around a lot of coaches, I've coached a little bit, you know, obviously outside of my football career, obviously, that is the biggest compliment you can get, honestly, as a coach, because you ultimately are a teacher. And if you can teach and make the material engaging and get the guys to buy in, like, you're awesome. And so I think that definitely shows up in his work, in the work that he puts out every single week.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the communication element is going to be huge on Saturday night, because that stadium is going to be raucous. And yeah, I'm curious about this too, Logan. We talk about the Commanders no huddle sometimes, but I just kind of had a different appreciation for it. Something clicked for me for whatever reason in that game against Tampa, of just how challenging it can be for a defense when you do have guys running in and out, because the Commanders do sub. They don't necessarily go hurry up, but the lack of huddle means defensively you can't huddle either. You still have a sudden huddle up. They probably have some kind of hurry up, like, let's get on the ball and let's go, while they're all standing there in the middle of the field trying to figure out what's going on. And then especially in a place like Detroit, where it's so loud when you're on defense, like, that's great. You want that energy. But the Commanders are kind of used to dealing with hand signals and you know, playing whisper down the lane and making sure their communication's really good. And for Detroit, they're used to it on some level as well. They've been the defense that's playing at Ford Field when the defense or the crowd is really loud all season. But now, without a huddle, with having to maybe do this a little bit more on the fly, do you think that's something that the Commanders can take advantage of? I would say even more strongly, yes, before Alex Anzalone came back. He's a huge element for what they do as the green dot, and he was back in week 18 and will be playing in this game. But how do you think that, I don't want to call it underrated, but kind of subtle thing, might wind up playing into this game?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question, and it's something that I appreciate too, but probably for a different reason. Obviously, the getting lined up and getting things communicated is a huge element of that, but also what I've found when you go no huddle, we had game plans when I was playing, I'm trying to remember, probably everywhere I was actually, where we would encourage no huddle or some type of 2 minute on third down specifically because the crowd didn't know when to cheer. So you kind of get this, like, you know, you get like a cheer because, you know, like if you think about it, if I'm coming out of the huddle, that's when the crowd will start cheering. And when you watch the Tampa Bay game or something like that, the crowd's loud, but they're not cheering. They're not screaming. And like the guys that are screaming the whole time, it kind of dips like right when you're about to snap the ball. So I think that's one element of advantage. Obviously, I didn't really think about this until you mentioned it, but, you know, they have this rule where they have 12 men in the huddle. That's a penalty, obviously, right? But when you're not in a huddle, you can bring as many people on and off the field as you want. So I do think that that, and such a big part of defensive football is making sure you match the personnel because you have tendencies with certain personnel on the field. So it's like, it's 12 personnel, and then the coach is signaling 12 from the sideline as he's making the call to the linebacker. But which 12 is it? Is it 1286? Is it 1282? Is it 12? Like, is there another version of 12, you know, 73?
And by the way, as someone who charts personnel, like teams treat Ben Sinnott and Zach Ertz 12 personnel very, very differently. Like, typically they will match the 12 personnel with Ertz and Nickel, and typically they'll match Sinnott and base. But Detroit plays the highest level of base defense in the league, so there's a chance that that changes on Saturday.
Yeah, so again, then you're like, oh my gosh, getting this communication worked out in terms of 12 personnel, then it's Nickel on the field, and it's like, oh, wait, I really want to run a fire zone blitz now as the middle linebacker. They're lined up. They're already ready. And I have to get that communicated. That seems like a big lift. And so I do think it does simplify what they can do and what they can feel comfortable doing. But I also think it's, you know, if you know, they're not going fast. So you just take your time, get it communicated if you're Detroit. But it does kind of present some issues. And again, the communication on Washington's side is going to be also hard to deal with as well because you got to get it communicated. It's going to be loud. But I do think that It is a subtle advantage in multiple ways for an offense because it helps you navigate the noise. It helps you kind of get them in a little bit of a bind. So I do think there is something to that for sure.
Speaking of double-edged swords, the amount of man coverage that the Detroit Lions play is the highest rate in the NFL. And there's part of me that's like, sick. They're going to play man coverage against Jaden Daniels. He's going to run all over the place. You're going to play man coverage against Terry McLaurin like that. There's also the rest of the receivers who I don't necessarily trust as much against man coverage, although Diami's been pretty solid this season. If you look at like his PFF grade versus man, it's still in the green. Love that. But, you know, guys like Olamide Zaccheaus, probably a little bit more effective against zone. And obviously, Detroit's good at it. It also helps them out on the run defense. They can be really aggressive downhill, especially their linebackers love to just come up and fill quickly because if you're a man-to-man on the running back, whether he has the ball or not, like you're just getting to the guy that you're covering. So, you know, things like play-action fakes, you're kind of covered on the back end, and you see that pop up on tapes from time to time where there's not these big holes in zone coverage because they're not playing zone coverage. And so how do you feel like that element of what Detroit does on the back end plays out this weekend? If you're them, do you continue to roll the way you have been rolling? Probably because, you know, the identity piece. But do you have to at least think about it because of Jaden's legs being one of the most unique weapons in the sport?
Right. So let's put some context on that. So they do pressure a lot and they do play base defense a lot. But if they're in their five-man, they're 3-4 front, right? That's going to play like a pressure every time you run the football. They're going to fit it and they're going to chart it like it's a blitz, right? So that's going to spike that percentage a little bit, right? When you watch the Buffalo Bills game, and Buffalo is like really spread out, right? They run an offense in terms of like pre-snap structures that's very similar to the Washington Commanders, which is one of the reasons I like to check them out. They spread out with you. And they don't want to blitz as much. They don't like the space, right? If it's condensed, if it's tight, they're going to be a little bit more aggressive kind of coming downhill. But they pressured Josh Allen, I think it was like 34%, which is like way off of their season total. If you look at Caleb Williams, they pressured him a little bit less. Obviously, the stationary quarterbacks, the guys that don't scramble a lot, you know, Jordan Love, they pressured a lot. Sam Darnold, they pressured a lot. And if... So based on that kind of history, I don't expect them to pressure a lot. However, if I'm Detroit, I would still pressure a lot because I think when you look at the things that the Commanders have a hard time with, it's pressure. It's unblocked pressure. And when you look at Tampa Bay, I think is a great example. Look at week one. Look at how much consternation they were able to put the offense in. And again, Jaden Daniels is a rookie, all that kind of stuff. But they spied him a lot. They played more zone. They played softer coverages, and Jaden's able to sit in the pocket and pick you apart. Look at the Arizona game. They kind of pulled way back off their kind of preseason or the four games before that blitz percentage, and Jaden Daniels picked them apart. The teams that kind of say, hey, if you can beat us in man coverage and beat us while we're bringing pressure, good for you. Like Pittsburgh Steelers, right? They were a great example of that. Even the Cleveland Browns to a certain extent. Again, remember the first couple drives of that game are really tough for the Commanders to get going. So they had, again, the recent history shows that they'll play more zone to scrambling quarterbacks. But I also think maybe their best bet is to stay aggressive and just be like, hey, we're going to get you on enough of these percentage-wise that it's going to tip the scale in our favor. We're going to get got, but we're going to get you too.
So the Lions blitz percentage this year, five highest games, they blitzed the absolute hell out of Jordan Love in week 14. That was a 62.5%.
That's the other thing, sorry to cut you off, is they blitzed a lot on first and second down too because they wanted to run the ball. So there was a lot of run blitzes. There's a lot of third down blitzes. Like that was a huge part of what they thought would be effective, right? And one of the things they do, which I love, is they'll blitz formation. So like let's say you're in a tight formation, you bring the receiver across like in a jet motion. Usually you're running either away from the motion, so they'll blitz somebody right there, right? So they do have some of these checks that on first and second down that are very effective in terms of kind of creating consternation for an offense, but on first and second down.
Yeah. By the way, these are blitz percentages against the pass. So, we're not even talking about run blitzes here, but
that was just
context.
Something I thought about while we were talking.
For sure. No, it's great context. Like they're actually blitzing probably on a higher percentage of than the numbers I'm giving overall, but on passing downs, 62.5% against Green Bay in week 14, 53 against Minnesota in week 18. They played Mac Jones and the Jags in week 11. That was a 51%. And then Sam Darnold again on week 7, 51%. Their lowest numbers of the season, hilariously, their third lowest was against against Green Bay in week 9. So they didn't blitz him the first time. And then we're like, never mind. We're going to flip that script. But their lowest was Matthew Stafford in week 1. They only blitzed 19%. I guess they just were figuring that Stafford is experienced enough to pick you apart, and the one-on-one matchups you have with Kupp and Puka. But week 3, they played Arizona, and they only blitzed 21% of the time. It was probably the best running quarterback they played all year in Kyler Murray. So I think that probably is instructive on some level. And I think the other like dynamic moving target that you're trying to figure out if you're Aaron Glenn is Jaden Daniels has been exceptional against zone coverage this year, as you were just talking about. His completion percentage is well above 70%. It's one of the best in the league. Has not turned the ball over. Maybe he has like one time, but like very rarely turns the ball over versus man, way more boom or bust. Lower completion percentage, more touchdowns, but also a lot more interceptions. So how much fire do you want to play with? And I think the last element of the fire here is when you play man coverage, you are more susceptible to the quarterback run. Mm-hmm. And if your eyes are turned against Jaden Daniels, he can get out. And that is what I would be concerned about and why I would probably lean towards playing a little bit more zone, like you said, but at the same, or, you know, opposite, but at the same time, now I'm just talking in circles, but like this is the gamesmanship that's happening, right? What does Washington want to do? Control the ball.
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to play ball control offense, fine, play zone against us. We'll go on 12 play drives all day long and burn 8 minutes a clock. And so I guess I probably ultimately land, if I'm Glenn, on let's be who we are. Let's make them hurry it up, because the more possessions that are in this game, the better we feel about winning it. And that's probably the game I would play, knowing that at times I'm going to get got.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those things where you kind of talk through it a little bit and you're like, oh, actually, this initial solution is the best one. Because again,
you keep talking with two playoff teams that you realize are really, really good, you're going to run into problems at every turn.
Right, and I think like that's the thing, though, is like they seem to have, you talk about their identity. Their identity for scrambling quarterbacks is to not blitz as much. But like if you watch the game versus Josh Allen, like they just, and again, this is interesting. I feel very comfortable playing zone coverage versus Kyler Murray because he doesn't see it super well, right? Like he is looking kind of big play hunting, right? Josh Allen, you play zone coverage, you put yourself in a huge bind because he can run around, he can extend plays, he can pick you apart. And I think if I'm Aaron Glenn, and again, I don't know him at all, but I would learn from that decision and be like, hey, we need to be maybe not this passive. We need to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of bringing pressure. Because again, like Jaden Daniels will hurt you, but if we can get you to second and 15 on a first down run or on a first down pass, bat a ball down, like second and 10, whatever, just increase the level of variance for the offense. That plays to our favor, because what does variance bring to an offense? It does bring explosive plays, but also leads to punts. And if we're an offensive-driven football team, I want our offense to have the football as much as possible. And there are games where you watch it. Like I go back to the Bills game, for example, where they're trying to mitigate the explosive play. They're trying to keep a top on everything. And that's just really not who they are. You know what I mean? You can tell it's a little uncomfortable for them defensively. So I quite frankly would expect them to blitz, be a little bit more aggressive than they were in that game. Probably not, you know, Jordan Love, Sam Darnold levels of aggression. And again, some of that's because of the formation. You mentioned it's versus passes. What do those teams like to do on first down? They like to play action a lot, right? So you're going to see on those early downs, it's going to kind of catch some of those run blitzes a little bit more in that bucket. So again, back to the original point. I'd bring a little bit more pressure, be a little bit more aggressive if I was them. And if I'm Cliff, I'm making sure I have answers for that, right? I'm making sure Jaden feels good for both, right? If they're going to play this kind of weird two rotation or cover three rotation, like where are my answers? What are my solutions? If we're hot, where are my answers? What are my solutions? And we did the game plan taping with Dan Quinn, which airs on, I think, Friday this week because of the playoff game. And he was saying, you know, Jaden's getting to a point now where he can handle protections. I'm like, that's great coaching by Cliff to say, hey, we're getting a little bit of heat. I think this is the look we want. Let me slide the protection, hit this ball over the top to Terry. Like that, again, he's maturing as a player. But the thing that this comes down to, if I'm Cliff matching this, is just, hey, this is our offense. This is what we do. They could do all these different things, but if we have answers versus like from our day one install stuff that we feel very comfortable with, we don't need to worry because you've shown an ability to handle all this stuff. And so that's where it's I think it's Cliff. Like you just kind of say, oh, do I need to put something in for this blitz or for this run or for this? No, we got a guy who can handle it and we got an offensive line that can handle it. Let's give him the keys and let him run with it.
Among all rookie quarterback seasons since 2016, Jaden Daniels ranks first in completions, passing yards, touchdowns, completion percentage, and passer rating against the blitz. So they've done a really good job of that this year. Daniels generated a total of plus 50.3 EPA against the blitz, more than double any other rookie quarterback since 2016. So historically great against it. And he was blitzed on 32.7% of his dropbacks this season, sixth highest in the NFL. However, this is strength on strength because the Lions blitzed at the second highest rate in the NFL after losing Aiden Hutchinson in week 7. Over that time, they allowed the second lowest passer rating, fifth lowest success rate while blitzing. Opposing offenses lost minus 51 EPA against the Lions blitzes in weeks 7 through 18, more than twice as much as the next closest defense. So this is a major strength on strength. However,
I just want to say this before we keep going.
Yeah.
Like there's got to be a little bit of context on there too. They're also, the teams that they're playing are in way more obvious passing situations, right? Because
yes,
game flow, usually when they play the Detroit Lions, is that the Detroit Lions are up. So you're going to throw the ball more. And I can be more aggressive because I know what you're doing. So this is, again, where we come back to the, I don't even know if we said this at the top of the show, but like you have to control the game script here as much as possible if you're the Commanders offense. You have to stay in the race because it keeps them from doing some of this more aggressive stuff and kind of teeing off on you in a way where they're like, oh, they're going to pass. We're going to bring all of our kind of different pressures and put this offensive line in consternation. So that's going to be a huge element, I think, also.
Yeah, the Lions faced the fifth most passes this season. They faced the least amount of run plays this season. 369, by the way, the most was Carolina. Carolina faced almost 600 runs this season.
That's a lot of runs.
Hilarious. So all that stuff said, there's another element to this matchup that we haven't really gotten into yet that I think is also going to be really interesting, which is the run game. Obviously, Washington's run game struggled tremendously against Tampa. We've talked about this quite a bit. Unlike a lot of the previous games where they've struggled with the running back run game, the quarterback run game never got going either. One of the games that I queued up to watch was the Indy game because of Anthony Richardson. And I was like, Well, how did they do running the football? Jonathan Taylor did not have a good day that day. And you also see, by the way, later as some of those games go on, some of these games I watch, I was like, well, now seeing how they're reacting to run, let me watch some of the play action stuff. And you're on like your fourth play action pass of the game. You look up at the score bug and it's 23-7 and you're like, of course they're not biting on play action anymore. So that script part becomes really, really important as well. But Anthony Richardson had some pretty big pops in that game, and they were not all read option. Like, there were some that were just straight up quarterback run, and they used some of the counter actions to say, like, hey, we're going to fake a pitch to the right and then just have Anthony Richardson run left. Linebackers are flying towards the running back. They take themselves out of the play, and next thing you know, Anthony Richardson's got 18 yards. I know you watch some of the Buffalo tape, and they'll run Josh by design too. How do you think that the design run element and then whatever scramble element plays into this also affects this game on when Washington's offense is on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that if speaking from a quarterback standpoint first, I think where I find Jaden Daniels to be most effective is in like dropback situations, right? Like where he's in the pocket, he's making a decision to scramble. I think that's where he's most effective because he's such a devastating passer. And if the pass isn't there, there's a run lane, he can be really effective. And obviously there are situations, especially now that we're in like playoff football time, where I would feel more comfortable running him, like the draw last week versus Tampa Bay, I thought was a great decision. So, stuff like that. And I think just finding, you know, three, four plays here important. But for us, Anthony Richardson does a great job with the design quarterback run game. But I think I kind of bucket Jaden Daniels in the same bucket as like Josh Allen, where you don't want him, you don't want to restrict him by calling a run for him. You want to say, hey, here's the space we're creating with the pass concept. If you like it, deal it. And I feel like Jaden Daniels kind of operates in a similar way, or at least the last couple of weeks has been operating in a similar way. So that's how I would kind of, this week I'd be like, hey man, remember, if this isn't here, like if they give you this weird cover two look and we got this play called, you can always run. You know what I mean? And just kind of keep that at the forefront of his mind. And he's done a great job with that the entire season. You know, he's leading the team in rushing for a reason. However, I do also think that this week feels like, after watching the Buffalo game and watching elements of the Green Bay game and some of the Minnesota game, this is a great opportunity, I feel, to get our running game back on track. Because I will say Aaron Glenn is very conscious of keeping good numbers over receivers. And what I mean by that is, like, you got three receivers over here. We're going to be 3-3, but we're going to apex maybe with a linebacker, right? So the box is actually a five-man box, right? And so we have hats. We have enough hats to block everybody in the box. And when you think about the best rushing performances from this season, you know, the New York Giants, for example, the Tennessee Titans, those big, huge, vaunted performances where the running backs really were very productive, it's because they were getting looks like that. So if I'm him, I'm going to be like, if I'm Cliff, I'm going to spread everything out. I'm going to maybe get in some 10, some 11 personnel, 12, but I'm going to remove people from the box and be like, match this. And if you don't, I'm going to throw a little bubble screen. And we're going to live that way. And I do think that that is going to be very effective just based on the defensive structures that they've shown versus teams that play similar offensive structures to the Commanders. So that's kind of, so it gives me a lot of confidence they'll be able to stay on schedule running the football. And again, I'm not like super worried about Jaden Daniels running the ball a ton as a design runner, but I think those two things together will lead to an opportunity for the Commanders to continue to possess the football and have an effectiveness running the ball. So,
Last thing I'll ask then, because Cliff was asked about the deep shot to Terry early on Wednesday when he spoke, and he was basically like, yeah, early deep shots are cool. Getting the ball to Terry is better. It doesn't matter how. We've got to get 17 involved early. So when you said they're really good about keeping numbers over certain receivers, is that worrisome at all? And how do you make sure that Terry's getting his touches? Because he is, in many ways, I don't know, like Jaden's got to be the engine to make the thing go, but pick your next most important car part, and Terry's absolutely that.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't really thought about it because, again, when you talked about this on the preview show that you did with the guy from Detroit, and you just talked about the top of this show, like, you know, people that can beat man-to-man coverage, the list for the Commanders is relatively tight. You know, when you look at the Lions, they've got a bunch of people that can beat man coverage that you love the matchups with, and we'll talk about those guys more in a second. But I do think there are ways, and one of the ways that I saw that I think Green Bay did a great job of, I don't know if Terry would get this lack of attention, but you know, like when Cliff does such a great job of getting these 4x1 sets and really forcing the defense to be like, shoot, we have to augment our coverage structure to accommodate this, and you get a really nice 1-on-1 on the backside. And they did it on, I think they did it, Green Bay did it, and it was like a 3rd-and-2, and they basically hit a deep shot to Watson on the perimeter, and Watson just ran by the defender. Because again, they're banged up on defense. They're banged up with defensive back. The defensive line's banged up. They can't create pressure with four. And it was an explosive play. But I also think you can throw a hitch. You can throw a slant. You can do stuff that is a little bit more low risk to get carried, to ensure Terry gets the ball. I think the other thing too is the screen game has always been really good to Terry, but I love the, for Terry specifically, I think he's an okay screen runner, but I love the RPO slant. I love the deep shot. I love the isolation 101 basketball. Those are things I would kind of look at first. And I think they really are good for the offense. You know, especially we're in like a 4x1 set. Like Cliff loves to throw a screen over here. Why don't we call a screen with an isolation and then maybe a draw opportunity, right? Like we can do some stuff to give ourselves answers here. And so that's kind of the way I would lean. But again, you know, Watson is a good player for Green Bay, but he's not Terry McLaurin. So maybe they don't do that. Maybe they keep the structure the same. And if they do that and they're going to play kind of two shell and do some different stuff, let's run the football.
Now you got four on the other side.
Right.
All right. That's the offense. Commanders are going to have to really run the game through that unit if they're going to win, because side of the ball we're about to talk about is perhaps the biggest challenge in the NFL in 2024-25.